This is an interview with former Mahoning County Sheriff Ray T. Davis for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project on Law Enforcement Officers. This interview was conducted by John Bukovinsky at the interviewee's home on March 4th, 1981 at 10 o'clock a.m. Mr. Davis, what do you remember about your parents and family?
Well, surprising, not a whole lot, really. I do remember I was born and raised on the West Side. I attended Washington School, King High School. Then I didn't go directly to college. I went to Youngstown State University after I served my time in service. I went on GI Bill of Rights. And my earlier life was enjoyable. We went through a depression that Dad managed to always provide. He was a good provider. And the times, they aren't like they are today. You knew everybody then. You spent more time together. I guess that's because of television. Television has hurt us as far as a neighbor, being the good neighbors with your friends and neighborhood.
What was it like in Youngstown in the 30s?
Yeah. Well, in the 30s, I was in high school and sort of an innocent type of person. I didn't know what the cruel world was all about. I graduated from Cheney in 1936. And the main thing was our parents thought mostly about security. Matter of fact, I can recall my mother said, get a job as a mailman, and you'll be sure and have security all your life. That's about the far ahead as they thought.
And you said that you were in the service. What branch?
I was an infantry paratrooper. Volunteered. I was a air cadet for 30 days. I was married. I just married a few years and had a daughter, a year old. I joined the air cadets, but I had a defective finger on my left hand, my index finger. I cut it as a kid, and I was rejected. Then I came out, and shortly after that, I was drafted. I went into the infantry, and I was going to the paratroopers when I was instructing in training camp, and that's when I lost my hand.
When you came back, how did you link up on Mayor Henderson?
Well, what happened when I came back, I didn't go into shock from my problem from losing my hand until I get out of service, and it was rough, but you don't know which way to go, and just by chance, my wife and I had a child, we lived with a fellow by the name of Earl Hoffman. Earl was a city detective. And he was a very good friend of Charlie Watson, who was a trustee of Youngstown State University. And on Saturdays, we used to go out to their farm, and I got to know Charlie quite well, and he put me to work at his plant, Youngstown Welding, and he wouldn't let me do anything. All he wanted me to do was collect my pay, and that lasted about a couple of weeks. I told him I just couldn't live like that. I had to earn my own way, so he suggested that I go to college, and that's how I got up to the university through Charlie. And then from there, to answer your question, just the year I graduated, I heard about the opening as executive secretary to Mayor Henderson. Clyde Osborne had the job. You know, Clyde now is the Comm Police judge. Just before he took the job as secretary of the mayor, he was graduated from college, and he was a reporter for Vindicator. Then he took a job as secretary of the mayor, and at the same time he was going to law school. And I was secretary 3.5 years, and he was 2.5. Well, after 2.5 years, he passed the bar, and he went into practice of law, and I took Clyde's place as secretary of the mayor.
What sort of relationship did you have with Mayor Henderson?
Well, everyone has a good relationship with the mayor. It was a judge. He's just one beautiful person. He's probably the most honest man I've ever met in my life. And he ran the city of Youngstown like it was his own business, and right down to the pennies. And he was great. I think he's the best mayor that I've ever known.
As secretary to him, what were your duties?
Well, they were pretty much the same. We would do the hiring and firing and interviewing and just everything that he couldn't do politically. When he wasn't available, that it was the secretary job to go out and take his place, that we do give speeches and to represent him at whatever the problem was or whatever the incident was.
What did his administration and his police department under Chief Allen accomplish in the way of reform?
Well, as you know, and as everyone knows, we've had the same police department for the last 40 years, and our police department has had national publicity. It's been the best, and it hasn't been so good. But it's always the same men. So you have to give that credit to the mayor, who hires the chief that does the job, does the supervision. And he appointed Allen. Allen was a sergeant in the police department in Erie, FBI trained, and he came down, and Henderson gave him a free hand. I guess that's the important thing, to get an honest man and give him a free hand, and that's what Henderson did. And they just turned the department completely around.
In what way?
Well, the police department was loose. They would overlook a lot of things, and under that administration, they wouldn't stand for anything that was wrong. They just went out and cleaned up, I guess, all blocks of the USA, and they went out and bus racket rule was a slogan. And that's exactly what they did.
Why do you think he was defeated in 1955?
Oh, that's very simple. The apathy of the people. He lost by 3 votes a precinct. And just as a spot check, we checked a few dozen precincts, and we talked to 10, 12, 15, 20 people that said, oh, he's a shoe-in, we won't bother going to vote, and they didn't vote. And we lost by 3 of the votes of prison.
After he was defeated, what effect did this have on you and your political career?
Well, I like politics, and I of course had to go find a job elsewhere, and which wasn't too much of a problem. There was a lot of opportunities, and Chuck had interceded for me on several occasions, and I had no problems at all. But I like politics. I wasn't thinking about it as a career, although I was there 3.5 years. But I always like to help people, serve people, and it gets in your blood, and it got in my blood. And I think we got out there in 1953, and I was a committeeman and on the executive committee, and I wanted to start back again. I guess I did like it, so I ran for councilman, and I was elected to council in 1957. I served 2 terms, a term and a half when I ran for mayor. They were constantly after me to run for office, and not being a two-party system in Mahoning County, we have two parties, but it was so unbalanced that we really didn't have what you'd call a two-party system. And whenever their election would come up, they'd want me to run for an office, and I couldn't see the point in running and not winning. So I just waited my opportunity to what I thought was a job that could be taken, which was sheriff. That's when I ran for sheriff in 1960.
That's the reason for running for sheriff? I mean, what were your particular reasons?
Well, my reasons were that it was a job that you could take, and it's a job you can improve on. I thought that the incumbent sheriff and the past sheriffs weren't doing a very good job, and there was a lot to be desired. And like I say, I liked our community. I liked to help people and do things for the area. And I thought that was one place where I could really go in and do a job.
What was the transition like between Sheriff Lane's administration and yours?
It was horrible. When we took office, we weren't allowed to be, we wanted to go in there for about 6 weeks to a month before we took office, and they wouldn't permit us to go into the department. And we didn't get in there until December 31st at midnight. And when we walked in, there was one man there, and all the keys were on the desk, and he got up and walked out and left us with a bunch of keys. We didn't know where they went. They went with door they fit or anything else. And we had a hard time. We had our men that we were going to run the job, plus about 50 friends that came in to help us take care of things until we got it organized.
What kind of changes did you make?
Well, we made all kinds of changes. We renovated the jail. We changed the whole system, and we put the sheriff in uniform. They had no uniform before that. They would have a traffic hat, traffic shirt, and maybe a pair of pants, and no standard uniform. Very few in the department were in uniform. They were plain clothes. So that's when we, at the same time when we adopted the Standard Uniform Act law for sheriffs, and we put everybody in uniform.
How did you go about selecting the personnel?
Well, we did that the month before we took office. After he was elected, we started looking around for people. And of course, there's you look for qualified people that are interested in the job. And of course, there's a lot of people you have to consider because they help you get elected. We had meeting after meeting. We met every day and every night for a long, long time, picking our people and make sure we didn't promise too many jobs. And then we, for the complete month of December, we conducted a training program. We had city policeman Tony Ross, who was with city policeman at the time. He conducted our traffic. We had our own seminars, our own training programs. We were in office, we were at pretty good training, and we continued our training after that. Was from the FBI seminars, the State High Patrol seminars, and whatever the schools that we could send our people to the high schools and so on.
When you took over in the early 60s, Youngstown was in the midst of wholesale bombings. As sheriff, what do you remember about that?
Well, I do remember that it was pretty much controlled by rackets, and the first thing we did, we eliminated all of the slot machines. We went to every place in the city and the county, and we confiscated several hundred expensive slot machines, and as a matter of fact, we had a truck full, and we took them down to the city water department. Smashed and burned them. That was the beginning. Then we conducted many raids on gambling and vice. We established a rapport with the City of Youngstown Police Department and all of the departments by telling them what was the problem incident was and asked them to go with us. We would never go into another department's jurisdiction without telling them we're coming or ask for their assistance. And we did that, and we arrested and closed up many gambling places.
Do you remember anything about the bombings? Did you guys work on any of the cases or anything?
Yeah. Most of them, I'd say all of them, were in Youngstown, and we worked with them. We let them conduct the investigation. We just worked with them and know what was going on and offer our assistance or help in any way way we could.
When somebody was arrested in the 60s, what kind of procedures did your deputies have to go through? What was the process like?
Well, the process is the same everywhere. You arrest someone, you get a warrant to go to their place to search whatever you're looking for. And if you find evidence, you just arrest them, take them down, and charge them. Then after they're in jail, then they're either bonded out, they remain in jail, then they're arraigned and tried.
Was it harder or easier? Well, it probably was harder, but I mean, did it change much after the Miranda Act in 1966?
Oh, sure. That was one problem police departments had. It got down to the point that the policeman was almost afraid to make an arrest or go in and make a search and seizure, right, because they'd turn right around and file a lawsuit against you.
Would you say your job is like a 24-hour day job? Are you always on call?
Well, I made it a 24-hour job, 7 days a week. We worked around the clock on the job, plus it's a political job. You have to be elected before you can do a job, so of course you have to devote time to the general public. And I would work 12 hours a day, then go out and campaign another 8 hours, attending different affairs, and then in between that, if I have a radio in the car, any problems, I would just go right from where I was to whatever the problem was. And heck, the first couple of years, I was up day and night. I was even working traffic accidents, just to make sure it was done right and help me with the problem. When I get a call over the radio and say traffic accident, I would go directly there and supervise. They're saying what they're breaking in any criminal work. I would hear it on the radio and I would go there just to make sure that it was handled properly.
What did you expect of the people under you in the way of work?
Well, one bad fault that I got too close to my people. They were all trained and taught to do the job, and they'd done it well, but I didn't have the fear of God in them. As far as I was concerned, I was more of a brother or a very good friend, and there'd be times they'd let you down and you'd have to straighten them out.
Were there many jailbreaks?
Well, they're not for the condition of the jail there was. And there was a lot of jailbreaks, and they still have jailbreaks. First of all, it's not a jail-proof or escape-proof jail. And if you recall, when we ran office, and the only time that we were in trouble is when there was the jail was our problem, simply because we were undermanned. We ran the jail with a dispatcher, a jailer, and a sergeant, and an assistant jailer, three people. And there's three floors. Now they have three at the desk, but they have one on each floor. Our problem was that we had one jailer to make the rounds, and he had to make the rounds of three floors. And in between that time is when they would escape or attempt to escape. It wasn't because we weren't doing jobs, it was because we were under man. But even after that, when the others came after that, and when they the courts insisted that we have more people, the same things happened. There's no bars on the windows. I've never seen a jail in my life that didn't have any bars on. We only had the screens, and they weren't reinforced concrete walls. They were just cement block walls with mortar that was half sand that they threw with a pencil, and the locks they could pick the locks with. You wouldn't believe how easy you could pick those locks.
What type of relationship did you have with the media?
Well, I think the relationship, I had better relationship with the media than any other office holder, simply because I didn't phone them. I was straight with them. Whenever I thought I had something, I would let them know. They wouldn't have to dig for it. If we did something didn't come out exactly right, I still would tell them so they would know, and let them decide if they, there was news or not. We didn't try to hide any news. As a result, they appreciated that. And we had good rapport with the media.
How about with other police departments?
Well, I think that's one thing that I would say that stood out in our department is that when we took office, there was no rapport, a good relationship with any police department in Mahoning Valley, and we established that. We used to have the weekly, monthly meetings with them, and just sit down and go over our problems and establish jurisdiction and how we were going to work together. And they appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard to cover the entire Mahoning County?
It was very hard. And that was one of the reasons, maybe it was a selfish reason why we did it, is that as you know, the Sheriff's Department is the chief law enforcement officer in the state of Ohio. We're over everyone. And we knew that, at least I knew that the other sheriffs did too, but there was a lot of jealousy. They wouldn't even work together. I knew that the state highway had an excellent, very highly trained traffic department. And the first thing that I did is sit down with them make ground rules, and the way we worked it is that whoever got to the accident first would handle the accident or the problem, whatever it happened to be. And the second department, which would be us or them, would handle the congestion that caused by the problem, if you understand what I mean. That way, rather go there and say, get out of here, we're going to handle this. We just didn't do it that way. We worked together, that would double your force. By working together, you had twice as many people. And same on criminal, or vice, if it was in the city of Youngstown, or Struthers, or Camel, or wherever, who had a police department, we would work with them. If we heard of something in the city of Youngstown, we would immediately call the chief of police and tell them, and say, now, this is the situation, we're going to take care of it, and we'll be able to help you. Now, if they didn't do it, we wouldn't tell them the second time. We would go in and do it ourselves. And of course, it would be embarrassing. But we worked very well with all of them. It was something hard to do because every department had a selfish motive. They're all visualized headlines, making a big fuss and making headlines in the paper. But we help organize the Peace Officer Training Corps and the Crime Clinic, and that is for social clubs of police departments. So we got together every month, and it worked out real well. We got to establish that we all work together. Just add more people to your organization when you have other departments working with you, rather than against them.
On the way over here, I heard like New York City now they have a vigilante group. Was there any a problem with yours?
No, what I did, and it's still in existence today, I established the reserve unit. We had more reserves than we had regular people. And I insisted that they have the same training before they could work with us. And they would work when some of them would be sick, on vacation, or understaffed, or undermanned. They averaged 22,000 man hours a year for me at no cost. Didn't cost us nothing. Just that they were successful businessmen. A vice president of the bank was one of our heads, and the owner and president of another business was his assistant. Now those people just loved this kind of work, and that was her hobby, and that's what they did for us. We had skin divers, traffic people, criminal people, civil branch, we faced it everything for us. Whatever needed their help, they were there. And the big affairs, the Jansfield Fair or whatever, they would come in and help us do that. That's a lot of help, 22,000 men are.
The late 60s saw new problems develop. What do you remember about those kind of problems, like the drugs and war protests?
Yeah, I was the first one to realize the drug problem. I used to go to make talks at the high schools and grade schools, and during my talk I would tell them that there was drugs in their school, and they were highly indignant about it. The first thing I did, I took one of my captains, I think it was a captain at the time, and sent him to Washington, D.C., to the narcotic school, and he was the first police officer to attend that school outside of the regular narcs. They never had taken any police officer before, just strictly for the training for their own department, which is federal. And he took a very comprehensive schooling, a long time, almost 13 weeks or whatever it was quite a long time. And he came back with all the knowledge available at that time. And we, in addition to other work, we took on the drug problem.
Did you have any problems with war protesting?
The only problem I can remember is showing disrespect for the American flag, that type of thing, which would create a problem. It would get a call that they had one of the local resorts, like have in mind, is Arrowhead, and the fellow was asleep on the American flag. Of course, we had to take care of that. You do it with a lot of discretion.
How about with civil rights, like after Martin Luther King's death in 1968?
Well, we always had a small problem in the jail, especially. The minority people would have organizations that they would try and come in and visit and see that they weren't abused because they was a minority person. Which we never did, and we the biggest problem there is that we didn't have the facilities. Facilities that are still there, they're very bad. Is that we there would be times when we would be segregation, but it wasn't done because they were a different race or a different color. No, we really didn't. Towards the end, the matter of fact, right now, I have a lawsuit from one employee saying that I didn't give her equal opportunity, and she's asking for a difference in pay between what she made and what a deputy made. She said she should have received deputy's wages. Well, she wasn't a deputy, she was a dispatcher, and I deputized them. They wore uniforms strictly for prestige. It wasn't because they did the job of the deputy, just for the appearance of prestige and the fact that they want to have a badge, they want to carry a gun. And being the type of person I am, that's what I did for them. But no, they didn't. They didn't do deputy's work. The closest they came to deputy's work was with our major. They did handle those women prisoners. And they, of course, they would pay more money than the other girls.
What I was referring to mostly was the riots in the city of Youngstown. Your office help the Youngstown Police Department in those?
Well, the I think the biggest one was the strikes. The strikes in the with the truckers. We had the problem in the city. We also had the problem in the county. Of course, because in the county there were several truck stops, and in the city is when they went down and stopping the steel trucks from going in and coming in and out of the steel mills. And I think our department and myself, we actually broke it up after a couple killed. I think there was a teacher killed, and also one of the haulers that was killed. down there and broke that up. Like I say, in the city, anything in the jurisdiction of the Youngstown Police Department, they're an excellent police department. They're an entirely different individually. They have outstanding people. The only difference that's ever been in the Youngstown Police Department is the supervision. Like I told you before, is that we've been the best in the nation and we've been not so good.
You know, you had to run for re-election in 2 years.
4 years.
No, 4 years, I'm sorry. What do you remember about the campaign?
Well, I enjoyed campaigning. It was a lot of hard work because you already had your regular duties to do, and you also had to do that to be elected so you could do your job. So that kept you out every night and the late hours, and you had to go everywhere. And even though it was hard work, I enjoyed it. It doesn't make sense if you have to campaign to keep a job that you did before you can do the job. Being elected comes first, and after you're elected, then you can do the job. If you're elected, you can't do the job. And I met a lot of people. I probably know more people in Mahoning County than anyone because I worked hard at it. I worked hard to meet people. I didn't even know where 12th Street in Campbell was when I went down there the first time. That's the main street in Campbell. And now I can tell you almost everyone down there and every place and every place, every church did that.
Did anyone get out of the can in the election?
Our first one was the toughest. They were entrenched. They were well established. They were the majority party. They had all the clout. They really made it miserable for us. They threatened and harassed our workers to the point that they were going to beat them up. They completely demolished all of our signs. We replaced them 3 or 4 times with a big cost. And it was just tough. You'd go someplace, they wanted to know what you were doing there. And matter of fact, went to one affair in Youngstown, and one of the opponents was there representing the incumbent sheriff, and he got a little physical with me, and right then had to straighten out and tell him that we would stand any longer, that they do their job, we'll do ours, what the best man did.
Why do you think you were defeated by Paul Burns in the primary?
Well, that was apathy too, on the part of the people, and really stupidity on my part. I had already spent my budget. I had all my materials and advertising programs, everything all laid out for the fall. I had no program at all for the primary because I didn't think it was going to be that hard of a problem. I knew Paul. As a matter of fact, Paul is a very good friend of mine. He wasn't a heavyweight. He was a real nice guy that people liked. He was a joke, told jokes and that type of thing, and well liked by people. But I didn't think he was going to be a threat, and we didn't do anything. We sat back and spent absolutely no money, although I'd already spent $10,000, but it was set aside for the fall. I mean, we weren't even campaigning. My people weren't out campaigning. I wasn't campaigning, just going to the normal Republican functions. And the have-nots went out and worked, and we sat back, and he spent at least $20,000, and he went around and put it to good use, and he undermined a lot of people that in the party. Vote. A light Republican primary is 20,000. That's a light primary. 12,000 voters. So you figure there were have-nots that came out. He got half the vote, and I got half. He got 200. He both got 6,000 in the vote. It was a fluke. It was something that never should have happened. And as a result, the general election showed that. 4 years before that, I'd be Michael Yorish by 26,000. And 4 years later, he beat Grimes by 26,000. We see the vote that I drew from the Independents and Republicans, what have you, that Grimes couldn't touch because he just didn't have, didn't know them. They didn't know him. It was very, it was a bad choice. Nice guy, but he, you know, he just didn't know politics and he didn't have a chance. He just went right back that there was no longer a two-party system. It was the Democratic machine in action and they just, they slaughtered.
Looking back on your 16 years as sheriff, what do you think, what were the things that you think you accomplished?
Well, in the 16 years, we eliminated, we cut down on the crime. The gambling was nil. We went in there, they were just gambling and boards and slot machines and everything all over the place. All types of gambling, we eliminated that. We definitely gave better, we gave the Mahoning County a police department. They didn't have a police department. The sheriff's department just didn't function. And we put cars out in the road. We were in the same respect, we were different than Youngstown. Being a larger department, more personnel, their men were specialists. Our men did everything. Our cruiser car was a cruiser man. He wasn't a traffic man. He did traffic work. Civil work. He did domestic. So he did criminal. He was trained to do everything. And the people, they give them a sense of security that they never had before. And of course, you know, we had our youth program where we worked with youth and built all these ball fields and playgrounds, which I was very proud of. We raised $250,000 spent on kids. We built 50 playgrounds. We built bleachers for two high schools. We built two basketball courts. We built two complete playgrounds, one in Mobile, one in Maple Ridge. We built around Sebring. And we did a lot for youth. And our theory always was that keep them tired and keep them occupied, there you're going to get in trouble. Now, how many kids we kept from getting in trouble, that's something we don't know. But I would say an awful lot.
Do you think then that you left the office better than when you found it?
Oh, there's no question about it. Talk to all your attorneys today that were practicing then. They'll tell you that the rapport that that we established with them on the service of the court papers, it was out of this world. They just couldn't believe the changeover. And talk to people in the county, they'll tell you about the service we give them that they didn't get then. I don't think they're getting now. And it's hard to, just, you know, offhand to think of the things you did at the jail. We turned the jail over completely. We made a cleaner jail, a better jail. Visitation, we corrected that where more people could visit. And what we did, what they didn't do before, or they aren't doing now, is we housed 20 to 30, 35 federal prisoners. We charged them per diem. I think the last time it was on $15 a day per person. That was income for the county. Now we did that being understaffed, being undermanned, and being criticized for not doing the job. We still took in these federal prisoners and housed them. And at that time, there was only two in the state of Ohio county jails that were doing that. Now I don't know if there are any. And they were hardened criminals. They were tough guys. But we still did it because we felt as though that someone had to do it. The federal government needed help. And so I helped them by taking them in prison.
Is there anything that you might have done differently?
The only thing I would have done differently, I don't know. It's hard to say.
I was always in trouble because of my jail, and I was always in trouble because of my jail because I was understaffed. See, in the state statute, it says that all the sheriff has to do is maintain the jail and service the papers of the court. Those are the only two things you have to do, which is your jail security and your civil branch. Well, I always went two steps further. I had a traffic department and a criminal branch. Now, my problem then was, am I going to have four departments or am I going to have two, which is required by law? Well, I felt as though that I would be doing the county a great injustice if I didn't have a traffic department and a criminal branch out in the rural areas servicing the people there. So as a result, I didn't sufficiently man the jail, we handled that okay. Well, man, we handled it perfectly. That we undermanned the jail, and that's where my problems were. And I don't think I would. I still think that I constantly tried to budget time like the problems are having now. To get more money, I would show them where I needed more money, where I needed more men to do the job. But I was always accused. And I still went out and maintained the four departments and running the jail understaffed. And I still think I'm doing the same thing, even though that it hurt me and I got a lot of bad press as a result of it. But I still felt as though that I was doing the right thing. I felt as though it was the responsibility of the commissioner to give me the money to do what I wanted to do. And of course, budget time has always been a problem. These departments now are that they're screaming, they're undermanned, they're understaffed. But I faced that every year for 16 years, and I always managed.
What kind of relationship did you have with the commissioner?
But of course, when it comes to budget time, they had their job to do, and I had my job to do. My job was to try to get as much as I could from my department. Their job was to dole out the money what they thought was distributed equally or evenly among the departments. But I always told them that I felt as though that there still was a little politics involved, that being a Republican and being the only Republican, that I got the short end of the stick.
What do you think makes a corrupt law enforcement officer?
Oh, gee, a lot of things. First, there's some that they feel as though they're underpaid and they should make more money, and thinking that if they aren't making what they should make, they should leave and seek employment elsewhere. So they'll be corrupt and try and make money on the side. Then in law enforcement, there's a lot of temptation. You're in a position where you have a job to do, and sometimes involves letting people loose and not being as strict or doing the job the way it should. And so they'll say, okay, I'll help you monetarily and that type of thing. And there's so many temptations as a law enforcement officer. You have to be a dedicated person to remain a good policeman, because it's hard. And fortunately, 99% they can't be tempted, even though they probably were placed under temptation many a times. And there's that 1%, whatever, 0.5% or 3%, whatever it is, that they can't resist temptation. They will accept bribes and get themselves in trouble.
In what direction do you say law enforcement now is headed?
They seem to be going cycles. When in the 60s there was the Esposito Miranda Act, and civil liberties and civil rights were brought up and all that type of thing. And that was a period when an officer was almost afraid to do his job. But it has a lot to do with the Supreme Court's who is appointed to the Supreme Court, so a liberal judge or a more conservative judge. where they can, the pendulum seems to swing back and forth, and I think that the police are getting back on top of it.
It's then getting easier, would you say?
I would think so. Sure, the only problems I think that the your government has today, including all departments, is from federal on down to state and county and local, is the money to operate with. The men are just as good. And then too, you get good people, you train them well, and they turn out the excellent police officers, and the area we're talking about is when they saw the problems they were facing, they got out. I've lost a lot of people, a lot of good people. And as a matter of fact, I would say that 99% of them I helped get jobs elsewhere. At the time when General Motors opened up, a lot of my men left and I got them jobs out there with no hard feelings for them leave. I understood why they left. They were young guys and starting family, and they wanted to make more money and with less grief. And they left us.
Do you think that the people, well, let me put it this way, nowadays, do you think the people show any animosity toward the policemen?
I don't think so. Before my time, the policeman was the boogeyman, but when we took office, we tried to turn that over, and I think the policeman is highly respected and admired. I think the people realize the need for them and what a good job they do and what a dangerous job they have and with the salary that they make that anything they can get they deserve.
Do you think there's anything else that is important that we might not have covered yet?
Well, we talked a little bit about my youth program. I that's something that we'll always cherish. I feel as though that we've really done over and above what we should have done, and I think it's something that all departments should be doing. Don't be taking, give. Now you give in your services, but you can go over and above that, and I think our youth are the most treasured commodity today, and I think that they're the ones that we should be catering to. And I know in the program that we had, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of kids that we made facilities available to them where they can go out and enjoy themselves and keep themselves out of trouble. Like I say, we built tennis courts and basketball courts and 50 baseball fields and bleachers. We just would sponsor talented youth. I would sponsor bowlers. I would sponsor complete baseball teams, and little league 15. I sponsored a skater went to national tournaments, and he ended up winning national singles and things like that. People, you know, the thing that people don't know that you know you're doing because you're in a position where you can do it. And that's why I always work so hard at getting elected, at being elected, because if you aren't in, you can't do anything. You can't be on the outside looking in, you got to be inside looking out before you can do these things. And I just love working for people and doing things for people. And you're in a position where you can do that. A lot of times people will ask you to do a lot of things that aren't legal or right, and you have to refuse them that. But there's a lot of times too when you will borderline cases that you'll do because you know they are borderline and you know you're helping people and you aren't hurting anybody. And it's hard to explain. But I enjoyed it. I love politics. Politics is a highly trained profession. People that are in it think they're politicians, but they aren't. They don't know the first thing about politics, about government. And I think that it has never functioned well until I took office, because we didn't have a two-party system. We had strictly a Democratic Party, who was by far the majority party, and a weak Republican Party. And it's still pretty much that way. It takes one individual to break through and to entice the Democrats and independents to vote for them. And the first guy to do that was Hennessey. It was just an uphill battle. I think it was a 65-35 deal going in. Normally, a Republican in the city will lose by 12,000. And in the city, in the county, you get stomped. And it's a science that we had, when I ran, we had to at least lose the city by 5,000, go out in the county and pick up the difference. And in my last election, I carried every precinct, every ward, every township, every village, every subdivision in Mahoning County. I carried every all seven wards in Youngstown. I carried all the wards in Campbell and Struthers and Lowville, which are predominantly Democratic. So people themselves are voting for the person. You just have to get out and let the people meet you, and for you to show them that you are qualified and can do the job, I'll vote for
you. Being that former Mayor Hunter was a Republican, what kind of relationship did you have with him?
I had a good relationship with Jack. Jack was a very naive person. When he went into office, he didn't know anything about politics. He was asked to run because of his reputation as being a good person, an honest person. And he had to feel his way. He had to not completely trust anybody, including myself, because he didn't know us. And we knew that we were helping him and trying to get him elected. But he had to make sure that what he was doing, because he was a very honest person. He was like Chuck. He was a good man. And he picked out who he thought was his best chief. He asked me for recommendations, and I gave him three, and the one he planned was one of them. And as a matter of fact, I was raised with Don Baker on the West Side. And he picked himself an excellent man. I gave him three excellent people, and he picked Don. And he did the same thing. He put his trust in the chief and let him do the job with a free hand, and the result of the job got done. But my favorite still is Henderson. I still don't know that. Even as judge, he's outstanding. He's one terrific person.
Do you think that Youngstown might be headed back to the Republican Party now?
Not right away. I unless someone outstanding comes along, you have to almost do it on your own Republican Party. Use the Republican Party as a base, but the base isn't at large. You have to go out, really extend yourself to pick up the support that's needed. A Democratic base is tremendous. You almost get nominated Democratic Party and you're elected. But I can't see anyone that that could move in right now and do it. Jack Hunter could. Because he's well known and he's done a good job, but I think he's had his fill of it. I don't think chance of him coming back. And I don't know anyone. The chairman that we have is known, very few people know him. He's a professor at the university, teaches political science, a very outstanding person. But if he had run himself, he'd be killed because no one knows him either. It's these people. You have to work at it. You have to really establish yourself. I went to one political function election year, and I was sitting with two ex-FBI agents that were there, Congressman Williams, Chairman of the Republican Party, Dr. Benning, and the candidate for Sheriff, Scheidel. Now, Scheidel is probably, the way I put it, I told the chairman, I said, now Scheidel is the most qualified person I have ever met that's running for public office outside of myself. I could, say it better than me. And they were real appreciative. I said, but, I said, he's going to get stomped. They said, well, why, what makes you say that? I said, well, I said, here you've got an outstanding person, good family man, relatively, real good, honest person, highly educated, highly trained practically, and with several departments, and you really got yourself a gem. I said, but you didn't school him, you didn't educate him. I said, here he is running for office, and he's going to spend all that time from then until the election, introduce himself to people. I said, you people should have had a budget, you should have given a limited expense account a year ago and let him go out to all these churches and veterans groups and affairs and introduce himself. Then comes election time, he's already introduced, he's going to go around, I'm the guy that you saw at a certain place and I talked with you and I think you like me, will you now support me and vote for me? I said, he's going to, he can't do that, he's going to still go right down to the wire, introduce himself to people, and this is just not enough time, and he's going to fall short. He's going to run a good election, but he's going to get people, and he did. Good man. Nice kid, too. So, not taking away from the one that won, he was also well-qualified, and he won because he had introduced himself for his drug program. For so many years, he was going out giving drug talks, and everyone knew him. They knew the name, and they knew him, that he was affiliated with law enforcement, and they voted for him. And there was a lot of dissension in the Democratic Party at that time, and I think if the Republican candidate would have been introduced like he was, that it would have been right down to the wire, and then a close election. Because neither one of them, they were both new, and the Democratic Party, their vote was up for grabs, and the Republicans didn't grab it.
Do you think he has a future in as sheriff?
What's that?
In trafficking.
If you don't get discouraged, I mean, that's many problems, and he's pretty much a self-centered person. In politics, you have to take so much and it just keeps quiet about it. You can't have controversy fights and going with everybody. You gotta sit back and relax and say, okay, I don't like you, but I'm not gonna tell you I don't like you. Maybe next time you'll do something for me. But if he doesn't, things don't go right, then he comes right out and expresses himself publicly, which he shouldn't. It's a bad mistake he's made. It's a problem. I don't know what his budget is right now, or how many people he have, but it's going to be tough for him. It's going to be tough, and the Republicans, if this Shidell will start grooming himself and stay active, then next election I think it'll be another good one, because I think in 4 years that the incumbent isn't going to make too many points because the good publicity isn't there right now. It may change and might start getting better publicity, but the type of publicity they get now is outside of just his name before the public, which I don't remember Ole's market or not. Guy P. Ole had a market downtown, and he said every morning he'd put his produce and stuff out of the sidewalk, and he was in violation of the sidewalk ordinance. And about once a week he was arrested, and he said to him, that's good publicity. He said, any type of publicity is good, long as they spell your name right. I guess that's so.
One of the things that Trafficking ran on was that he was going to get rid of patronage. Do you think that's possible for a person who's running for a political office?
No. The only thing you can do, you can give them the same thing we're talking about. You're dealing with the chairman. You're dealing with the executive committee, you're dealing with the central committee. You're talking about 300 people or 400 people in the central committee. You're talking about, well, the Democratic Party, maybe executive committee, we've got about 30, 40. Democrats have three times that many. And you're talking about the chairman himself. Now those people, they all know people. And they can keep their organization, you have to help people. Like, you aren't gonna go out and break your neck for the Republican or Democratic Party. This is going to be a time when you can come around and say, look, this is my son or my nephew or my niece or someone needs a job, can you help them? So you start looking where there are jobs available. He said, okay, the sheriff's department has a job or two. Would you like police work? I think I would. Okay, I'll talk to the sheriff. Now, if he don't talk back, he's going to be in real trouble, because the Democrats in this valley win because they have the largest and best organization. They're really organized. And if they don't support you, you can get beat in the primary like I did. So he's going to have to bend, he's going to have to be a half decent relationship with his party. He can't do it alone.
Did your office have a good relationship with the judges? Like, if you had a case, did you know that they would support you on it?
You mean a case against me, or?
No, a case against, a criminal law.
The judges that had nothing but good to say about the service that we give the courts, handling the prisoners, the protection that we would have there during courts, and the immediate service that we've given. Judges are very impatient, very busy people. When they call, they want someone before they even call them. They want them waiting at the door when they hang up. And we never held them up. We never let them down. And they thought that our department was really great. And I think you phrased wrong what you're trying to say. They do no one favors. They're honest, good, trying judges. And they try the merits of the case. But they don't want to know anything about who they are, what they are. All they want to know is what they hear in court. And it doesn't make a difference, who would be sheriff or prosecutor, they get the same treatment. But our rapport was very good. Same with the prosecutor's office. They were the opposite party, and we were very, very close, very close, and worked very well together. They've been over backwards for us because it was their job, because the prosecutor is a professional, well-trained attorney who is now a county prosecutor doing the job. It doesn't make a difference what their politics are. They have a job to do, and they're going to do it.
Being that your people work on the case and whatnot, how did you and they feel about plea bargaining?
Well, no one likes it, but there's times when you have to do it. You got such a busy court schedule, limited number of people that you possibly can't, try every case. And they'll take the ones where they feel as though that they won't just take them at random. They'll sit down, they work hard at it. They'll take the ones that they feel as though that look, we can win, but boy, we're going to spend a week here and there's a bigger possibility we're going to lose than we're going to win. Let's reduce the sentence. And then that's a reason for it. Is two reasons. One is they don't have the personnel and time to try it. The second is that they don't think if they do try it, they're going to lose. The FBI, they pride themselves in percentage of convictions. That's based on the fact that if they think they can't win, they don't try it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I think we got everything.